So how far can the Miami Heat go down here?
We can win this.
You think you can win the whole thing?
Yes. Yes.
You know you're not favored to.
I don't care. Speaking for myself, I don't give a damn what anybody says. And I think I can speak for my teammates when I say they don't give a damn either.
That was the Miami Heat's Jimmy Butler from an interview last month with our Rachel Nichols, showing off what is essentially his superpower, a total confidence and competitiveness that borders on obsession. It's a trait that's made Butler arguably the MVP of the NBA postseason thus far, but it's also the reason why the 31-year-old is on his fourth NBA team, and why some think it's only a matter of time before he wears out his welcome in Miami as well. Today, we dive deep into this psyche with ESPN's Nick Friedell, and we find out where Jimmy Butler's insatiable drive comes from. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, September 22nd. This is ESPN Daily. Nick Friedell, I want to start in a very important place here. The question that everyone, I think, is obsessing about at this point in the NBA playoffs. What the hell is going on with this coffee business that Jimmy Butler is running?
$20 a cup.
$20!
It is some high-level stuff from everybody who has had a taste of Big Face coffee.
Why is this guy selling coffee? Why is this happening?
Because he can, Pablo.
Nick Friedell is a staff writer for ESPN who's been covering Jimmy Butler ever since he entered the league in 2011.
This guy brought a French press with him into the bubble because he wanted to make sure that he had the very best coffee that there was. So in true entrepreneur style, Jimmy is charging $20 a pop, cash only, as he's said repeatedly during his last couple months, to teammates or whoever else wants to show up and give him some money.
Because like you can't get coffee nowhere here. So I might bump it up to $30 a cup. Just depends. People here can afford it, so anybody complaining?
Through the years, it's only the best for Jimmy Butler on a lot of levels, and the coffee is the latest example of that.
So we're going to take a deep dive with you into Jimmy Butler today, but let's start with the most recent stuff because they're coming off this Saturday night loss against the Celtics. They still have a 2-1 series lead. Game 4 is Wednesday night. But on Saturday night, in Game 3, the Heat's tendency to get behind early finally did catch up with them. And in the final minute, when they're flirting with yet another potential comeback, we saw Mr. Big Face Coffee himself sitting on the bench.
Usually in these situations, Butler would be on the floor, and I don't know if Jimmy Butler asked out or injury. He was not back in the defensive possession either.
But especially Butler needing an offensive hoop. It's going to be interesting to see the reasoning behind it.
So what was going on there?
Eric Spoelstra said flat out that he's fine. There wasn't an issue. Pablo, I've watched Jimmy Butler for years and years. To take him off the floor at any point is a struggle because of how bad he wants to be out there. But to take him off the floor at the end of a playoff game, I'm just wondering if there's something lingering that we should all keep an eye on. But in fairness to Spoelstra, he did have a bunch of shooters on the floor. And I know Jimmy has hit some big threes over the course of the playoff bubble the last few weeks, but that is not a strength of his game. So maybe everybody is telling the truth, and maybe Jimmy's going to be fine. But my Jimmy radar went off at the end of that game big time because you just can't take him out. He wants to be in there till the very, very end. So it's certainly something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, that is absolutely something to monitor. But prior to all that happening in Game 3, Nick, in this series and in these playoffs, the Miami Heat have been surprisingly impressive as a 5 seed. They're currently 10-2 in the playoffs. And with this 2-1 lead they still have over the Celtics, their hands are still on the steering wheel. And the one guy steering all of it, the one guy at the center of these comebacks that gave them that lead, is Jimmy Butler. So when we look at Butler's clutch moments so far, which ones stick out to you?
Whew. As far as Jimmy in this series, those first few shots, down the stretch in game one. Everybody's focused on Bam's block, and it really is one of the best there's ever been.
Adebayo, sky high with the block and rejection.
That is a ridiculous defensive play.
Aside from that, you're watching Boston, Pablo, early in those games, especially in the first one. They're just throwing body after body after body at Jimmy. And in the fourth quarter, he's making tough shot after tough shot.
A shot from three is good! Jimmy Butler giving Miami the lead with 22 seconds to go. Butler against Tatum, drives him deep, hangs, shot up, and in, and one! Jimmy Buckets delivering again, 12 seconds to go in overtime.
You start seeing those steals in game two, you're like, there's no way in the world the Heat would have won that game without him.
Poked away by Jimmy Butler, all the way down the other end. Butler leaves it, and Crowder puts it in. Jimmy Butler in the last 4 minutes delivering for the Heat.
I mean, Hero's made some shots, and Dragic has been there over and over, but it's Jimmy who is setting the tone. He's making steals. He's making plays all over the floor. And as Spoelstra would say later, he's making winning plays.
Tip by Jimmy Butler, saves it on the sideline near side to Miami, and they got numbers. Feed down low, Butler for the jam. Hustle for Jimmy Buckets.
And what's even crazier, man, is I feel like the signature Jimmy Butler moment in this potential title run, it wasn't even any of that stuff you just mentioned. It was against Milwaukee, top-seeded Milwaukee and Giannis. In game three of that series in the fourth quarter. Just describe for us what Jimmy ended up doing there.
The Heat are up 2-0, but in game three, Pablo, they just didn't look like they had it. They were kind of going through the motions at times. They go into that fourth quarter, they're down 12. Over the course of the next 12 minutes, Jimmy Butler scores 17 points.
Lost by Lopez. Hold on to your hats, here comes Butler. Miami has come to within one on a 12-2 run.
And then they outscore the Bucks. That playoff record, 40-13 in the fourth. Just complete domination.
Jimmy Butler's got 28 points.
And he's talking smack to the Milwaukee bench.
You could tell that they broke the Bucks' will, which is really impressive given that they're a five seed. The Heat came into this thing as a five seed. The Bucks, this was supposed to be their moment with Giannis, but in that fourth quarter, it was Jimmy over and over and over again. It was as if he wasn't just playing against the Bucks. He was playing against every person who had ever told him, you can't do this, you aren't good enough, you can't make this happen by yourself. He did.
The Miami Heat have just ripped the heart right out of the top team in the NBA, Milwaukee.
It's nuts when you look back to how this season began. There was an open question about whether he had what it takes to be the number one guy on a title team. And so far, he has been precisely that. So, Nick, you are ESPN's resident Jimmy Butlerologist. You were covering him back when he was in Chicago. Take us back to the beginning here and help us understand where all these questions about Jimmy Butler began.
Well, if we're going straight back to the beginning in Chicago, Pablo, it's important to understand that when he came into the league in 2011, I still remember Rip Hamilton, who played that 1 year with the Bulls. He used to say that Jimmy shot the ball like a dart because it had no arc on it whatsoever. But they loved his attitude. Jimmy lived in the gym. And then over time, Jimmy Butler got plugged in and he really elevated his game. And so what happens is, as Jimmy's confidence builds, Derrick Rose gets hurt. He gets hurt again. Joakim Noah, who was really the heart and soul of that Bulls group, he gets hurt. So all of a sudden, Jimmy, he's looking around going, hey, I'm the man now. I'm the man. And Pablo, it upset the hierarchy as Jimmy tried to kind of plant his own flag in the locker room. and say, hey, I'm the guy. Joakim is looking around like, hey, we still have Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose is still a former MVP. When you go from being the 15th guy on the team to being the first guy on the team, that is going to that's gonna upset some stuff. That's going to ruffle some feathers. And it all ties into what we'll talk about here, which is Jimmy didn't know how to lead. He had never been in that situation before, because all anybody ever told him was, hey, we don't know if you're good enough. The Bulls just didn't think that he was going to be that face that they needed long-term that could win a title. So they trade him to Minnesota.
I can't see being upset if you're him. You're joining Carl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins. You're with your old coach, Tom Thibodeau. Yep. I don't think that's a bad move.
Early on in that first year in Minnesota, I think Jimmy knew quickly that Towns and Wiggins were not for him. Jimmy wants everybody around him to put in the work that he is putting in on a daily basis. And specific to Towns and Wiggins, he didn't feel like they were doing their part. So Jimmy comes in and starts speaking his mind. and these guys are like, what? Like, this is my team. What are you talking about? Where are you coming from?
Wait, hold on, Nick. You got to tell, for the listener's sake, tell us the whole story about maybe the most infamous practice in modern NBA history.
So, Pablo, the summer of 2018 hits, and Jimmy makes it clear to Tibbs, I want out of here. I want out. I don't want to be here. He gets to training camp. It rolls along, and he's a no-show. And that's when the fun really starts to happen. He decides, all right, I'm going to show up. And that practice, I've talked to a few people who were in there, and they say Jimmy Butler dominated, just dominated everybody. And he was dominating everybody with, like, the third stringers on the Timberwolves roster. And everybody's looking around like, what is going on? And Jimmy's, like, yelling up into the stands, and he's talking to everybody, and he's pointing at Towns. The practice ends, Jimmy leaves, and then he goes and sits down and he talks to Rachel.
Oh, man.
That was the cherry on top of everything.
You return to practice for the first time with the Wolves, and I'm just gonna read a little bit of Adrian Wojnarowski's report on what happened there, that you were loud, emotional, passionate, we like to say, targeting Coach Tom Thibodeau, teammates like Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. How would you describe what happened today?
A lot of it's true. A lot of it is true. But you got to think, I haven't played basketball in so long, and I'm so passionate, and I love the game, and I don't do it for any other reason except for to compete and go up against the best to try to prove that I can hang. So all my emotion came out at one time. Was it the right way to do it? No. But I can't control that when I'm out there competing. Like, that's my love of the game. That's raw me.
I remember where I was, Nick, when that happened, and just, like, piecing together on Twitter, wait a minute, we are getting the full reality television treatment of whatever the bleep just happened here.
I mean, it was just a total mess.
Who's the most talented player on our team? Cat. Who's the most God-gifted player on our teams? Wiggs. Wiggs got the longest arms, biggest hands, can jump the highest, can run the fastest. But, like, who plays the hardest? Me. I play hard. I play really hard.
Should people think, because you are back in practice, that this is fixed or it's on its way to being fixed?
I think people think that. I think people think that. I would think that, too.
What do you think?
It's not. It's not fixed. Let's just be honest. It's not fixed.
Is it fixable?
It could be. It could be. But do I think so? No.
It only fueled, well, Jimmy is an ass, and he's never going to be able to get along with everybody on a team. But it also showed, hey, this guy, when he's healthy and motivated, can dominate at a level that not many guys in the league can. So,
right.
So Jimmy plays 10 more games that season with the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves finally traded him to Philadelphia, and he goes to Philadelphia, where their hierarchy is already in place. In a lot of ways, it is like Minnesota, because they had Joel Embiid, they had Ben Simmons, but early on, you're already hearing those reports of he's clashing with Brett Brown. He's not liking his role in the offense. And although it kind of came together towards the end of the year and he started making shots, as he is still doing late in games in the fourth quarter, they lose that Kawhi shot at the end of round two to the Raptors.
Four bounces, Nick. Four bounces away from overtime against the NBA championship.
It's off to Leonard. Is this the dagger? Biggest shot in Raptor history, bounces in, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Four bounce shot changed a lot of different things, but specific to Jimmy Butler, he knew in Philly, as much as he liked Joel Embiid, whatever his relationship was with Ben Simmons, he was never going to be the guy.
Mm.
And for Jimmy, that is... it's so crucial, because for all the talk about, I want to be around guys that want to win like me, that want to put in the work like me.
I want to win. I'm telling you, there's one thing you will never, ever, ever be able to say about me, is I play this game for any other reason other than to win. I hate losing. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
That is all true. That is legit. But Jimmy also wanted to be the face. He wanted to be the guy.
Okay, after the break, we'll discuss how Jimmy's winding path to find a solid basketball home started way before he came to the NBA, and how the Chicago Bulls unwittingly played a role in Jimmy's decision to go to Miami.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Nick, you've previously reported on Jimmy Butler's upbringing and his, quite honestly, insanely cinematic path to the NBA, all of these challenges that he faced. How would you describe that story for those who aren't familiar?
It is basketball's version of The Blind Side. Jimmy was 13 years old, and the quote is that Jimmy said his mom just didn't like the look of him and kicked him out at 13 years old. And he didn't have anywhere to go. He was kind of bouncing around from one friend's house to another friend's house. I think over time, he developed a relationship with one of the kids from his school. His mother took him in. They kind of became a surrogate family for him. They certainly helped him in the decision process to get from Tomball, Texas to Marquette. But this is a guy who wasn't sure where, you know, the next meal was going to come from, where the next bed, the next couch was going to be. There is a reason, Pablo, that Jimmy Butler works as hard as he does, because his backstory is such that he was unsure of what was going to happen in his life. And I can still remember, I talked to Buzz Williams, who was the coach at Marquette, and he said, Jimmy never dreamed of this, of being a star in the NBA, because his dreams couldn't be that big. He wasn't sure what was going to happen day to day. Pablo, he never lost a chip on his shoulder. Everybody kept saying, you're not supposed to be here. You're not that good. But I think that's why, even at age 31, his drive, to me, is the same as it ever was. And I think that all ties back into the very beginning.
Yeah, it seems like after this nomadic life in which he is itinerant, wandering from place to place, literally household to household, looking for a family, in the Miami Heat, he finds an organization that looks at him and does not only say, I do like the look of you. They say, as you allude, we want your face to be our face. Why did they know that they wanted this guy? Why did they feel like he would fit with them so well?
In order to understand this part of the story, Pablo, it's crucial to go back through Jimmy's last year in Chicago. The key for the Bulls in that moment was signing Dwayne Wade. And it was really a stunner, not only for the Bulls organization, but all across the league, because nobody thought that Wade would actually leave Miami. But Wade was brought in to show Jimmy the ropes and to teach him what it takes to be the face of a team. And that relationship grew tighter and stronger each day that season. I still remember in January, there's a late game against the Hawks. They blow it. The doors to the locker room open, and Jimmy and Dwayne had like just walked out of the shower. The message was coordinated, whatever it was about to be. Wade comes out and is like, guys have to care about winning. I don't think enough guys care about winning.
It just doesn't mean enough for guys around here to want to win ball games. And, you know, they're pissing me off, but I can't be frustrated and I can't care too much for these guys. They got to care for themselves. So,
just blisters the younger guys in the locker room. So he goes off for a couple minutes, and then he says to the media, I think Jimmy's got something to say to y'all. And so, like, we all walk over, and we're like, okay, Jimmy, and Jimmy echoes exactly what Wade said.
If you're not pissed off that you lost, man, something's wrong. This is your job. This is what you're supposed to love to do. And I don't think that everybody looks at it that way.
Looking back, Dwayne Wade was prepping Jimmy Butler in that moment in time for Miami. He's telling him, hey, this is the place that you need to be. This is the place where the culture is strong and they work like you work. So Wade, he leaves Chicago.
Wait, that's happening behind the scenes while they're both in Chicago?
That is happening in the moment, I think, after Dwayne realized, hey, this place, this homecoming is not what I thought it was going to be. So after Wade has just a miserable year in Chicago and gets bought out by the Bulls right before the next season, Wade goes to Cleveland. That doesn't work. But Pablo, if you'll recall, after Cleveland, he gets traded back to Miami. And he gets back to Miami and he has a message for Eric Spoelstra. Mm. And the message is, hey, Jimmy Butler's your guy. You're looking for the next face of the Heat, it's Jimmy Butler. He's going to be the face long-term if you can get him. And the Heat actually tried to trade for Jimmy in 2018. They just couldn't make a deal work. But for several years, they were working behind the scenes because they figured, hey, we have the structure in place to handle a guy like Jimmy Butler. We know the narrative is out there, but we know how talented he is. And they were one of the only teams that looked at almost the talent first and worried about the narrative after.
So Dwayne Wade is a sleeper agent for Pat Riley, is what you've outlined here, Nick. He is a sleeper agent. He is converting Jimmy Butler to, as we now know it, hashtag Heat culture. So when D. Wade says, this guy is like us, this guy is a Heat player, what does that mean, really?
What it means is that you are concerned most importantly on your work, day in and day out. And I'll tell you a quick story that underscores it for me. I was working on a story I wrote about Jimmy in February, and I was talking to Duncan Robinson, and I said, how did you know that everything was going to click in the way it has? He's like, I knew early. And I was like, well, what happened? And he goes, we had the younger guys working out at the facility in Miami at like 6 a.m. every day. This is in September. Jimmy found out about it. He walks in the gym at like 5, and he's been working out for an hour. So here comes Duncan Robinson and some of these younger guys, and they're turning around looking on the floor. And Robinson said that Jimmy looked over and just kind of gave him a nod and winked at him like, hey, what's up? What's going on? So it was kind of like, for Jimmy, it was love at first sight culturally, and it just kind of morphed into more from there. Pablo, you and I both know there are plenty of people who chuckle and they roll their eyes when you hear Heat culture, but I think it's been drilled into everybody. And Jimmy is kind of at the top of the chain down there and saying, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter what we do. We just have to play the game the right way, and we have to do what Spoelstra tells us to do. And that trust level between Jimmy and Spoelstra and between Spoelstra and the rest of that group and that coaching staff is just gigantic.
When you're talking about an organization that you have to work in order to survive here, and everybody's built like that here, from the Coach Pat, Spo, all of our guys, that's me. Like, that's what I need. That's what I've always been. So I guess it is a great fit.
So here we find ourselves, Nick, after all these years, after all this trajectory that you've traced for us, we find ourselves maybe at an inflection point in this series, because we just saw Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler maybe experiencing some tension. Jimmy perhaps being unhappy. And the doubters would certainly point to that and say, that's the Jimmy Butler I remember. And when we talk about Heat culture and the drilling of it, as you put it, it seems like Jimmy Butler is the drill. He is the guy who cares more than about anyone else we can imagine. That might be his greatest superpower. And so it can help build places up. The drill can be a tool for good, and it could also be a tool to destroy things. How do you think this story ends with Jimmy and this marriage in Miami?
I actually think it's going to end well. And Pablo, if you had asked me this question a year ago, I would have said there is no chance in hell. I texted him a few weeks ago, and I told him, like, I just want to tell you, after all these years, this is the happiest I've seen you. Mm. This is the happiest that I can remember him from a basketball perspective being. And I think what he knows is that no matter what happens here in the next few weeks, it's all going to be okay, because he's finally found the right place that matches his personality.
Just let me hoop. I love it. It's my outlet. Whether I'm playing with 50-year-olds at the local YMCA, or I'm dragging my homeboys in one-on-one, whatever it may be, I have to play basketball. It's not who I am, but it's what I love to do. Like, I legit love the game.
Miami needed Jimmy, and Jimmy needed Miami. And Pablo, I would argue that there is not another team, another organization in the league that could have gotten the most out of Jimmy the way the Heat have gotten the most out of Jimmy.
Do you feel like this is going to be a long-term arrangement?
Yep, I'd be here. This is it for me. I'm here to stay as long as Miami wants me here. I'm happy.
Nick Friedel, thank you so much for taking us inside this insane story. And I say this sometimes, here I could not mean it more genuinely. I cannot wait to see what happens next.
You and me both, my friend.
Coming up, Bryson DeChambeau won the U.S. Open golf tournament this weekend in stunning fashion. But I want to talk about the one player who's going to stick with me for a long, long time.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. Bryson DeChambeau won the U.S. Open over the weekend, and that is all well and good. The 27-year-old American is an incredible and innovative golfer. But he is not the golfer from that tournament that I still can't stop thinking about. That golfer is a 30-year-old New Zealander named Danny Lee. Danny Lee is a person I'd never seen before this week, and it may have stayed that way. Except the Golf Channel released one of the most indelible videos of an athlete that I think I've ever seen.
That's one. This is two. Just a little bit of a pull. All right. Happens to the best of us.
And expecting to tap it
yeah,
in.
Yeah, oh. This is where things go completely haywire and the brain just goes, you know, I've had enough. I've had enough of this U.S. Open stuff. I've had enough of this golf course.
To be clear, none of what that announcer said there is hyperbole. Danny Lee didn't just miss that first putt and the second putt. He proceeded to miss the third putt, and the fourth putt, and the fifth putt, all of them coming from just a few feet away. And not long after his sixth putt finally and mercifully fell in the hole, Danny Lee truly did have enough of this golf course. He chucked his putter at his bag and walked off, leaving all of it behind on the green, and he withdrew from the tournament itself. He cited a wrist injury, but on the internet, the headlines all use phrases like horror show and bizarre meltdown, like it's something that we've never even seen before. But that's not exactly right to me. I mean, it's the year 2020. This whole planet is Danny Lee, right now, just one enormous quintuple bogey, which is why I still can't stop thinking about the guy. And it's why I, weirdly, actually still have hope. Because it turns out that you can fail, and fail, and fail, and fail, and fail. But eventually, the ball does fall in the hole. And yeah, by then, maybe we're utterly furious with ourselves and or injured. And maybe we do desperately need to take a break. But my hope for us is the same one I have for Danny Lee now. That eventually, we can all just start over. And that eventually, we can try again. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.